We are in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I invite you to silence your phones if you haven't already. And away we go. Try and plow through a chapter a week. That's my plan here. I don't intend to gloss over anything, but I think we can probably do it in a chapter a week. Last week, we took a look at why we believe that Solomon is the author of Ecclesiastes. There are scholars, sophisticates today, who will say, no, that couldn't possibly be the case. But from the internal and the external evidence, yeah, it seems very probable that it is the case. We also looked at some key terms that we're going to see over and over and over again. Those key terms being what?
Under the sun
would be one of them right there. What's the other one?
Vanity.
So when we read under the sun in this book, what perspective does that give us? I mean, what is Solomon driving at when he over and over again mentions under the sun?
Every world was in front of
him. Yeah. You know, it's you know, your eyes are on this plane. Think of a deer stand. Anybody been deer hunting? Okay. Typically, you want to go into a deer stand. That would be ideal. Do you know why? There's a couple of reasons. One vantage point, you've got a good vantage.
The deer can't see you.
The deer, when they look on their plane. They tend not to look up. So if there is a threat, they don't care about the birds. They're not, you know, there's not going to be an orc fly in and, you know, take them out, or rock rather. So they're looking up. Also, you know, get your scent off the ground, you know, so hopefully it blows over the top of them. But really, they look on this plane, and that's Solomon's deal here. And he is examining really life on this plane. And we see more and more that it is vanity. Other translations will have it
meaningless.
I mentioned briefly last week what the word vanity means, literally.
Vapor.
That's right. It's a vapor. It's a myth. Whew. Poof, it's gone. It's just nothing. It's substanceless, really. And he highlighted this or illustrated this by looking at the cyclical nature of things over and over and over and over and over, and the repeatability of life. You know, it's a cycle. I appreciated Jeremy mentioning, I believe it was last Sunday, you know, life is really not a circle, but it is a straight line. It is a straight line of history, or maybe I heard it somewhere else. It is the straight line of history there. But even in the straight line of history, we see there's morning and evening the first day, morning and evening the second day, morning and evening. And there was dawn again this morning, and probably tomorrow again there will be dawn. But that is God's good pleasure. And there's purpose behind the cyclical nature of things, but it can be a grind. You know, people don't rejoice, thank God it's Monday. They don't. They look, oh, here we go again, another work week. Put your head down and plow into it, which is really a shame. But we kind of hinted at, and we will see from time to time, and today will be one of them, where Solomon gets his eyes up, and there and only there are we going to find significance and purpose. If we try to find it on this plane, really in anything, it is going to be a fool's errand. And there's just going to be nothing for us. So, into chapter 2, we're going to go today here, and Solomon is going to start out looking for fulfillment via experimentation. Okay, fulfillment via experimentation. Chris.
Yes.
Chapter 2, verses 1 through 8, please.
I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself, but behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly. That's it. Till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses, planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female servants, a servant, the female slaves, and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasures of kings and prophets. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines to the light of the sons of man.
What did he deny himself?
Nothing.
And we kind of see it buried in verse 3, right toward the end. You might go, okay, I did this, great, great, great. But what's his intent? What's his purpose? Can you glean it out of the end of verse 3 there? What his purpose in all of this experimentation is?
Study. It's almost
no.
Study of it. You said my mind and pointing my heart with wisdom.
That I might see, notice he says at the end, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I'm trying to find something good. I mean, where I go, this is really good. You go, this is a good thing. This is something worth pouring my life into. And he kind of hints also there at the fragility of life, of human existence. How fragile is the human life? How strong is the human being? How strong are we?
Not as strong as we think we are.
There's some beastie dudes out there.
Yeah, but they die just as fast as the rest of us.
They do. Poof. Brain aneurysm, gone.
Or not just with strength, but also with youth. You know, a few years ago, I knew a guy that his town was literally shaking the floor when his 16-year-old died of a heart attack, just got out of bed, fell flat in her face and died instantly.
You know, when are you going to get T-boned at an intersection? I swear I'm looking both ways. You know, there's somebody's always out to get you, but look, you miss that one guy, and he clobbers you. So, yeah, life is fragile. And even if it isn't, even if you live to be 100, as Tracy mentioned, you're still going to die. And if you go, okay, let's say, for argument's sake, hypothetically, that the earth was created in 4000 BC. Okay? So we've been around for 6000 years. How long is 100 years in that scheme? Nothing. It's nothing. Really. And so,
kind of thinking of that timeline stuff, I saw an interesting thing. It says, ancient Rome is closer to us than they were to Egypt.
Wow, yeah.
And it's like, you know, we think of Rome and that's ancient, but in the scheme of history,
right,
they're closer to us than they were to the Egyptians. And so, it's kind of like,
So Solomon's, he's going, okay, I'm going to find something. In my wisdom, I'm going to go out, I'm going to find something to give fulfillment. First thing he looks at, pleasure. I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. Enjoy yourself. It leads to madness. It leads to emptiness. Darkness. Frustration. You know, what will you find when you seek pleasure?
Drug addiction, alcoholism, hedonism.
Yes. Unrestrained. Unrestrained. How long does pleasure last?
You might want to ask a junkie that.
You know, until I need more. You know, the Proverbs chapter 23 talks about the drunkard. You know, he gets himself hammered, feels like a ship on the rigging. He asks, I feel like I've been beaten, but nobody struck me. And he wakes the next day to say, when can I find another drink? To get back to that feeling of pleasure again.
The same thing with the drug addict. He's, he or she's looking for that escape with that drug, and then once it's all over, it's like, I gotta go back to it,
There was a comment made by, used to be Justin Bieber's girlfriend, and here she is, all she has to do is make a post on Facebook or something like that, she gets $550,000, and she's saying she was suffering from depression. 24 years old, she's suffering from depression, and can't figure out why she's unhappy.
G.K. Chesterton, I quoted him last week. I'll quote him again here just because it's so good. It's a different verse or different quote from him. He says, meaningless does not come from being weary of pain. Meaningless comes from being weary of pleasure. When you get to the point where you have tried to satisfy yourself with pleasure and you find that pleasure doesn't satisfy. I mean, it's worse than laundry. It's worse than weeds. You pull a weed and three more grow up. You finish the laundry and three socks go in. Where's the fourth? Nobody knows.
Amen.
But
it's got to be the law of laundry.
But the seeking of pleasure, and Solomon, right off the bat, how long did it take him? Obviously not very long, but behold, this also is vanity. So I said of laughter, it is mad. Do we enjoy laughter?
Sure.
You know, what comedy? Is there a particular person you like to listen to as far as stand-up comedy or sites on YouTube?
John Priest.
Studio C. Tim Hawkins, awesome.
There's this little old lady that lives in my building. Her name is Kathy. I find her just the funniest person I've ever met in my life.
Sweet. Julian Smith, Brian Regan, Rhett and Link. We were watching.
Rhett and Link.
You know, with my crazy, weird guys out there, but they're hilarious. Irma Bombeck. Humorist, dead, wrote a column regularly, lighthearted, almost always, every now and then. But she wrote, there's a thin line that separates laughter and pain, comedy and tragedy, humor and hurt. You know, as we laugh, still, we know that there are things in this life that just bow our back. And even in the midst of watching and laughing, we think of something else and we just kind of almost choke there. And Solomon says, this is mad. This is madness. Yeah, okay, great. This is fun. Laugh. But still, what use is it? So that's not there either. So let's see. Wine. Wine. Is that going to make you feel good?
Sure.
Yes, of course.
It almost makes you feel good for a moment.
And it leads to...
Enjoy it while it's there.
A huge hangover.
Huge. Okay, my life in college was not good. And again, as I tell my kids, serve as a bad example. It is the life of one who is consumed by alcohol is painful. It is painful. And it does lead to despair. And what happened yesterday? What happened last night? Do you even remember? Probably don't.
I think it's interesting that, and I don't know what he means by this or what it means here, but it's like he caveats that I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom. So it may not have even been that he was drinking to excess, but there's still that, okay, so yeah, it may cheer you briefly, but it's not lasting.
Mm-hmm. It may take the edge off. But the reality still happens.
Well, there's more to the idea of just getting temporary pleasure. If drinking wine becomes an extreme, you will lose your job.
You can.
You will do anything it takes to get another drink. And to break that cycle is extremely difficult. And generally, once you do break that cycle, it's difficult to get hired. People will not look at you that way. They think you're just a drunk. Get out of here. A friend of mine's like that. His name's Mark. He's the manager down at the Sally Sherman store. And the only reason he's working there was the only job he could get.
You know, a number of men in the Air Force whose career has come to an abrupt end because of a DUI or an alcohol-related incident.
Yeah.
And that's not good.
And the sad part is, it's all in the seeking of pleasure.
Or the numbing of pain. A lot of people will drink to numb pain. Chris?
I was also going to say, there was a pastor just recently that was removed from his position because of alcohol abuse. And he went to rehab and got cleaned, and now he's like, okay, I want to go back to the pastor. And his church is like, hold on a second, I don't think so. He wants to go back to that same church to be...
No, that generally doesn't work out well.
Yeah, no.
Be a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
There. So, okay, well, okay. So pleasure and laughter and alcohol, no. So works. I made great works. I built houses, planted vineyards for myself, gardens, parks, fruit trees, pools of water, the forest, growing trees, male, female slaves, possessions. We'll get to possessions here in a little bit, so we'll stop with works. So he's made all these wonderful things. Are parks bad?
No.
No, man, they're awesome. They have grass in Colorado. I'd like forgotten that there was this kind of grass. We can take your shoes and socks off, and it feels really good. Not here. You know, you don't run through the parks barefoot, but you can run through the parks there barefoot.
I beg to differ. I do.
Awesome. Good on you. You got tougher feet than I do, Tom. Sweet. So he constructed all of these great things, and he really doesn't say anything about this. He just kind of gloms it on. But what he doesn't say is that I found great satisfaction and pleasure. And there you will find purpose and meaning under the sun. He doesn't say that. He just said, I did all of these things too. And what do we know of Solomon and his building escapades?
They were pretty good. They were well known for a long time.
Yeah. We know that he built
the temple.
No small endeavor.
No. He also built his house, which actually took longer than the temple to build.
He spared no expense.
Yeah, he also ate up all the cedar trees, I understand.
Well, it doesn't say that.
Doesn't say that.
He got them shipped down from Lebanon.
Yeah.
The cedars of Lebanon. The stables of Solomon, also historic to speak of. So, a great man of architecture as well. So, When he says, I made great works, we go, yeah, works like we'll never make. So he knows what it is to create something huge and extraordinary. And he doesn't say that he found meaning in them. And possessions. So possessions, male, female slaves, I had great possessions, herds, flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem, silver and gold, treasures of kings and provinces, singers, men and women, concubines, yeah, we know that. The delight of the sons of man. What do we think of in America as far as possessions? Are we a possession consumed people?
Yes.
No delay. Are we becoming more possession consumed?
I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Are there things out there that are facilitating us becoming more and more possession consumed?
Yes.
At the same time, you see kind of a reaction. Tiny homes, something that would not have existed. And you see generational changes where, you know, Great Depression generation, so they save everything, so then they have all these things passed on, and then my generation, their parents, whatever, die, and they go, what are we going to do with all this stuff? And they hate it. And so you see starting to move the other way.
This minimalism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not because they have a godly view of possessions, they're just reacting against the other, overreaction.
And what are they going to find?
Same thing.
I should have saved some stuff.
Yeah. You know, is there fulfillment in having nothing? Are they going to go, that's meaningless too? This is vanity here under the sun. And you can buy anything on your... Hey, Siri, find me this. Boom, buy. It's going to be here in 2 days. Want to pay more? It'll be here this afternoon.
There was an interesting... thing was said about that, and this is a discussion on about when the drug cartels first started coming into Miami, and the thought was this, that these people had all this tremendous amount of money. They'd take these duffel bags, full of money, into the bank. They got to a point where there wasn't enough things they could buy. And here they come in every day into the bank with duffel bags full of money.
More houses, more cars.
Okay.
Jay Leno. I mean, how many cars that guy have? You know, extraordinary.
He's got an entire huge building devoted to nothing but his cars.
Yeah. Climate controlled.
Yeah. And especially stuff that he faces.
Is that wrong?
I mean,
is it wrong?
No.
You're hemming and hawing.
I would say it depends on where you're at. Like, Jay Leno, I would say no.
Okay.
Because, you know, he still, it seems from outside looking in, he seems he's still got it together. You know, he's still, you know, he loves his wife, his family is there, he's still happy. You know, at the other end, you know, you could go, if his car becomes a obsession, everything else falls to the wayside.
You know, so a rich man has a car collection, a poor man has a stamp collection, or a Star Trek figurine collection, or whatever. You know, you've got your little collection. Maybe there are a few things that you look for and you try to save, or bottle caps when way eons ago.
Couldn't that just be a matter of your perspective on whether it's good or bad?
Yeah. By itself, it's a thing. It's just a thing. And he's got, what's he doing with his money? It's not mine to judge. That's God's judgment. Is he a philanthropist? I don't know. He may be. He may pour money he may help more people than I will ever be able to help. But that's irrelevant. You know, him having a car collection, pointless. So he's got a lot of possessions. And what did that give to Solomon?
Nothing.
What did, when he died, how much of that did he take with him?
None.
So he who dies with the most toys
gets nothing.
still dies. You know, he wins nothing. You know, he who dies with the most toys wins is a lie. It is a lie. It is the whisper of Satan. You need more. Commercials. You need more. Satan.
It's easy to see, though, why people get into that mindset if they don't believe in eternity. If this life is all there is, then you want to have all that you can, do all that you can, be all that you can now, because it's all going to end when you die. I mean, it's not like you can take it with you, but it's just that it's life under the sun. That's
right.
All there is.
And
Nietzsche.
Well, I was going to say, and this might be going a little off the trail here, but, you know, we also have Christians who say, you know, your best life's right here and now, so just do all you can. Well, I'm not saying anyone here, but there are some that will say your best life's right here instead of looking on to eternity. You know, T.D. Jakes just said not too long ago, oh, you'll never go broke if you obey God. Okay, so... So we
doesn't,
obey
doesn't,
God to
doesn't,
get stuff.
Doesn't square with history very well. So this is what Solomon went after. In verse 9, really the culmination, I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. All my wisdom remained with me, and whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them.
Well, that's kind of a real big problem there, because it says in 1 Chronicle, I got it here somewhere. Anyway, it says in 1 Chronicles that it was God that gave him all things. I don't know why he's saying, I am great. It was God who made him great.
Indeed. I became an officer in the Air Force.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a statement of truth, and that's not necessarily a statement of hubris or arrogance. Because I understand that it was God who did that. But for me to say that is... So I don't know that we can look at this as though he's boasting in what he did, that he elevated himself to that point. So let's just take it at face value here, that this is a statement. I became great and surpassed, and this is, we go, yep. We go, sure did. Indeed, he did. Michael Jackson. Whitney Houston. Prince. Heath Ledger. Robin Williams. What do they have in common?
They're all suicide, I think.
They are all dead.
They're all very successful.
They were all very successful. Were they good at what they did?
Absolutely.
I mean, they were great. They were great. They had God-given talent. And they took that talent and they labored with the labor that God had given them and created something really spectacular, and they're all dead. How?
Well, they all died essentially as a result of finding that or feeling that their life was meaningless or looking for something. There was not satisfaction for them in what they were doing, because most of them died of drugs. Overdoses, and one of them died from severe depression.
Yeah. Robin Williams hung himself. The others were drug overdoses. I mean, Michael Jackson. We look at Michael Jackson. A very handsome man. A very handsome man. He was a handsome man. I don't like me. I don't find satisfaction in what God had created. And so I have to morph it and twist it. And we see this. We see this in the world today. You know, the people who put prosthetics under their skin and tattoo green all over their face so that they look like a lizard. trying to find their identity, trying to find their meaning in life. But here, we have some of the greatest people in the world, and they're done. The pain that they live with, the hopelessness that they live with in this world under the sun, nothing. Man, God, give me eyes to see. Solomon says, my heart found pleasure in all my toil, and this was my reward for all my toil. Is there pleasure to be found in work?
Yes.
Yes. Is there pleasure to be found in things?
Yes.
Yes. Is it okay to experience pleasure and to enjoy these things?
Yes.
In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. Paul exhorts Timothy, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. God made the earth not to bite back. God made the earth for man's pleasure, for man's toil, to enjoy even the pleasure. But Paul rightly exhorts Timothy to exhort the rich men to put their hope in God, who gives us all things to enjoy. So, you know, again, where does the cart go? It goes after God. If you put the pleasure first, if you put the cart before God, you're not going to find God. You're going to be distracted by all those things, and they're going to be meaningless. They're going to be a trip up in your life. They're going to cause anxieties and emptiness and frustrations and bitterness. All of those things. It's okay to find pleasure in them, and Solomon did. He even says this, but he goes on in the very next verse, yes, I found pleasure in those things that we just went through in the first mess of verses. But then he says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity. And as striving after the wind, there was nothing to be gained under the sun. Well, that was great, but that was great in and of itself. As far as giving me that ultimate purpose, it doesn't happen. Again, man, remember that verse in 1 Timothy 6:17. I mean, there is Solomon's solution right there. Okay, so man, the experiment failed. So I turned to consider wisdom and madness and folly. All right, so let me look at just stupidity and wisdom. Let me compare and contrast the two. Let me go out and just be a dope, and let me go out and be very thoughtful about everything that I've done. For what can man do who comes after the king? Only what has already been done. I saw that there is more gain in wisdom than in folly, as there is more gain in light than in darkness. The wise person has eyes in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet I perceive that the same event happens to all of them. What is that event?
Death.
And taxes.
Well,
you know?
I'm wondering how the IRS is going to collect any taxes when you're 6 feet under.
Yeah.
Dirt in your face.
Or poor. So, all men die. So Solomon considers, and he's going to consider that next week too, as he considers the animal and the human. What happens to animals and human beings?
Dies.
They die. They die. Eventually. Even crocodiles die. So I said in my heart, what happens to the fool will happen to me also. Why then have I been so wise? I said in my heart that this also is vanity. For of the wise as of the fool, there is no enduring remembrance, seeing that in the days to come all will have been forgotten. How the wise dies just like the fool. So, is he, well, we'll talk more and more about this whole idea of all, you know, new. There's nothing new under the sun. Let's touch on it briefly. We talked about it a little bit last week, but this is important to know also. Are there new things?
Yes.
Okay, is that what he's talking about?
No.
No. He's not talking about technologies and, okay, there's new companies. There's, you know, there didn't used to be Facebook 30 years ago, I think. I don't think. Yeah, okay.
No.
MySpace. No, there weren't these things.
There was no Facebook 30 years ago, trust me.
Okay. So those are new, but that's not what he's talking about. What is he talking about?
The mindset behind why, you know, what, the mindset that created it was always there.
Okay. Are there new sins under the sun?
No.
No. I mean, new ways perhaps to manifest them, but it's still the same ink-stained heart. Are there new glories under the sun?
No.
You know, no, it's still obedience to the living God and living for his pleasure and his joy. Are there new pains? You know, my mother died. Anybody else's mother passed away yet?
Yeah, both parents.
Okay, yeah, both my parents are gone. Now, I can empathize with Tom, but I don't know what Tom felt when his parents passed away.
You weren't going to know?
So,
nothing?
So I can't say, oh, I know what you're going through, Tom.
Oh, I felt nothing else.
But there's nothing new. You're going to lose your parents. Or they're going to lose you. You know, and there's probably the real kicker for a parent. You know, man. So, make sure we understand that that's not what Solomon's not talking about, technologies and the like. Really, the nature of life. There's nothing new. There's going to be leaders, rulers, and workers. There's nothing new to that end. But wisdom and folly. So is he dissing wisdom? Is he saying, yeah, don't bother even being wise?
No, he's not. My question is, whose wisdom is it?
I'm not gonna try and read between the lines. I'm gonna take the wisdom of that the same guy talks about in Proverbs, and that is the wisdom that God has given in following after the living God.
Right.
Understanding that relationship there. Has he separated himself from that? I can't say. But wisdom is still a right application of knowledge. You know, a proper stewardship of the knowledge we've been given. There. So, why does he dismiss wisdom, though? I mean, what makes him go, there was really not a good point behind it?
Because he says that the wise dies just like the fool. I mean, the ultimate end is the same.
I think it says it pretty well, verse 16, for it says, there is no remembrance of the wise more than the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten, how dies the wise man as a fool?
But it's funny that we remember Solomon for his wisdom.
We do.
Know, like, I mean, there is that saying, but then you're like, you remember Plato. You know Plato, you know.
How many, though?
Yeah.
How many people of ancient history do you remember? Tell me one person that you know who lived in 400 A.D. Bueller? Anyone?
And we also know what we do know a lot of fools from history, too.
How about 1100? You know, we get... You know, okay, the history teachers who can start spouting names. You know, but even they are going to run out after maybe 10 or 15. In that era. Gone, forgotten. How? I mean, I would have to struggle to name all of my great-grandparents. I know my two great-grandfathers. Met them both, but go beyond that, I don't know. I don't know.
That's something I definitely struggle with. Or not as a sharp, but come to grips with that. Like, yeah.
In 100?
My kids, my grandparents, my grandkids, I'm nobody. You know, and I even look at Israel as a good example of, you know, you have these godly men, and then three generations later, it's all forgotten. They have to start over. Three generations later, all over again.
I mean, wisdom for wisdom's sake is good. You know, to be wise in this world is a good thing. To be wise for God's glory is even better. Again, cart and horse. Being wise, you're going to go, okay, great. What purpose was that? I'm going to die in the end. So being wise for the glory of God, there is one who doesn't forget. There is one who doesn't forget. And so it is not meaningless. It is not vanity to be wise in this world. Okay, I'm getting a little bit behind here, so I'm gonna kind of power through this. I want you to note verse 17 and 18. I hated life. I hated all my toil under the sun. I'm going to die and leave everything to other people. Who knows whether that guy's going to be an idiot or a fool. Yet he's going to be master of all which I toiled and used. My wisdom under the sun, this is vanity. And he despaired. This leads to when we have our eyes down here, turn the table over, turn the lights out, knock off the air conditioning, let's go home and just sit in the darkness. And hate life. This is a great evil. What has a man for all this toil and striving of heart, which he toils beneath the sun? For all his days are full of sorrow, his work is a vexation. Even in the night his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. To lay in bed with anxiety. You ever laid in bed and couldn't get to sleep because your mind's going brrrr, like a Gatling gun, thinking about finals or work, something going down at work or a family member or some such thing. And then Solomon goes, boop. It's almost like he takes a breath and then adjusts his eyesight. And he said, there is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? And he's not talking of temporal pleasure there. He is talking of abiding enjoyment. I mean, we know. I mean, we could sit here right now and list the miseries that are going on outside right now in the world. You know, what's going on in Puerto Rico? Oh, my. You know, what atrocities are being committed in Southeast Asia, and can you still enjoy lunch this afternoon? Absolutely. Can you still enjoy your children? Absolutely. Absolutely. This is from God. Again, the cart and the horse. You know, if you put the pleasures first, they're going to bring despair, previous paragraph. If you put God first, you can find pleasure in these things as you seek the pleasure of the living God. Apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? None. For to the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. For the one who follows after the Lord and seeks him and seeks to abide in him, God has given wisdom. For the one who pleases him, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner, he has given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to one who pleases God. Do we see that? No, I don't see that one fleshing out. But principally, and where's all Heath Ledger's stuff now? I don't know. Is God working it out to move that to the hands of those who turn and please him? I don't know. That's God's business. I'm not going to get into God's business. But I do know ultimately that the scales are going to go. And for all those who seek the living God and live to please him, he is going to lavish them with himself. And everything else is going to be superfluous at that point. It's going to be awesome. It's all going to be awesome, but it's all going to be awesome in God, in the living God. I'm going to leave you to chew on why he calls this also a vanity and a striving after the wind. Because you go, that's kind of a weird way to end it there. What is he speaking of? So I got four brief takeaways from this. There is nothing in this life. We've said it, we're going to say it, we're going to say it again, we're going to say it over and over. There's nothing in this life that will bring satisfaction of depth and substance for which you desperately long. There is nothing in this life that will bring such a satisfaction. Great achievements will always yield dust if savored apart from God. If you try to savor something great that you did, and you put yourself in front of God, as like Tom was mentioning, I did this. If you really think, I, me, dust. For those who are not firmly anchored in God, third point, death is going to be a source of great despair and anxiety. And I say this for the believer and the unbeliever. Okay, I know that there are saints who struggle with death. They look at death and they know they're going to heaven, but they still see this darkness in front of them, and their eyes are not on the living God. You know, if I stare at death, it's like, oh, is it going to hurt? What about my family? What if it's a long, drawn-out cancer battle? What if I get Alzheimer's and my mind goes away? Well, you won't remember. You won't know it. You know, and that's a blessing. People worry about it, but after it comes, they don't know. I mean, it's a sad thing to watch, but believer and unbeliever, despair of death. Fourth point, only satisfaction in God brings satisfaction in the things of this world. If you don't find your satisfaction in God, you are going to find no satisfaction here. And that's it.
You know, Keith, you go back to the first one, satisfaction in this life, and I think